I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Slug Sound Waves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, it is my finale, and we are going to talk to Bad Brad Wheeler, local blues man, KRCL DJ, and oh so much more. And we will also, chat with me. We are so happy to welcome Bad Brad Wheeler into our little underground lair here for the very final episode that I will be hosting of the Slug Soundwaves podcast. So first off, welcome, Brad.
Thank you very much, Dan.
So awesome of you to come in. And just to let the people know out there, we go back quite a long way.
At least 25 years.
Yeah, that's right. We should have had our high school reunion, but we're too slack motherfuckers to have our high school 25th reunion.
I guess technically then it'd be like 28 or 29 years now, huh?
We met up as sophomores in high school.
Yeah.
And obviously knew each other. And our high school is really small. We were friends in high school. My next memory after high school was you getting me a job at the Speedway as a bouncer when you were working there ahead of me.
Did we run into each other at the Soul Asylum show? Is that how we did it? I remember you coming down there and working too, but I don't remember how it...
Yeah,
or did
I
we
was
run
going
into each other
shows
at Speedway?
A lot. I'm trying to remember the show that it would have been.
Chickasaw Mud Puppies or something?
It might have been a Chickasaw Mud Puppy show. I definitely went to that.
Yeah.
And did they open for the Rave Ups, maybe?
It and the
Cramps.
Been
a Chickasaw Mud Puppy. I went to see the Cramps back then.
Was it the Rave Ups they opened?
The Speedway was definitely a place I got turned on to by just meeting the right people at our high school in Ogden who took me down to a Camper Van Beethoven show. Was the first time I ever went there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before either of us were there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, flash forward a couple years. And I think I was a freshman in college, maybe. We were out
of
high school.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was at Weber.
Right, and I was down there at some show, and you were down there working, and we struck up a conversation, and
I was like,
you hooked
me
up.
You want to make some money?
Yeah.
I remember that.
And it was like maybe the last 9 months of the Speedway being in existence, and saw a bunch of good shows,
saw
even
a bunch
working.
Of cool shows.
And it was kind of a bummer that it closed down. You know, it was a weird time, but saw Social D a couple times during those months and worked some fun stuff. And then, obviously, life goes on, right?
Right.
And I meet a lot of people who think it's funny that so many St. Joe High people ended up in like media world in Utah here.
I still wonder how we all did that.
Yeah, what do you attribute that to?
I don't know if it's Mr. Hart and Mr. Hoffman working hand in hand together on us, or
awesome
I don't know.
High school teachers.
We definitely knew a lot about propaganda.
yeah, right. That must be it. That's just Catholic school, I think.
Yeah.
So, obviously, now you're a main mover over at KRCL and have been there for years since before you went full-time even there.
I think I'm on my 18th year
of
hanging out at KRCL.
Why don't you fill us in a little on just sort of, you know, how you got started? Were you just like a volunteer DJ like so many others way back when? Or how did you first get involved with the station?
Well, I was working in Ogden after I graduated at the City Club. I was working like 7 days a week. I was burned out. I realized I could make more money working in the bar industry than I could in archaeology. And then I did it for a while, and I was complaining one day, like, I didn't like this. I wanted something different. Someone said, well, what would be your dream job? I said, man, it would be so awesome to work at the Dead Goat Saloon.
Yeah.
And they said, have you ever tried to put in an application there? And I said, no, I've never seen a help wanted sign. And they're like, well, you don't have to you don't have to wait for the help wanted sign to put in an application. So I put it in. Like 3 or 4 months later, they called me, asked me if I wanted to be the manager. I thought
Damn.
They had the wrong phone number. I explained to them that I just was a guy washing dishes and buying alcohol and doing the groceries and all that stuff. And they told me they thought that I had done every job in the bar but be the manager.
Yeah.
So I got the job as a manager at the Dead Goat in 96, 97. To be proactive about the blues shows, I just started calling Truman every Monday night to let him know who was playing.
Yeah.
And then I did that for a year. And then when I went back to Ogden to run Beatniks, around that time, I started having 2 shows to tell Truman about when I made the phone call. And Truman said, you know what, Brad? I want to start a feature. I want you to be in charge of this thing. I want to call Blues News. I want you to go down a list to figure out all the blues bands that are playing in the state for the week. And then I'll turn on the phone and you'll announce it and try and be as thorough as possible.
Nice.
And that was my gateway into the station. I did that probably for 10 years. And then one day he asked me if I wanted to come down and hang out and drive the car, per se. And I did, and it was amazing. And then I quit my job at the bar. Donnellan Maldonado was aware of that. And then they used to have the Roots and Blues show Monday through Friday.
Yep.
Troy Mom used to do that. Troy left, and then they wanted to get five different DJs to do it. So Donna asked me what I could, if I was open on, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Wednesdays or Thursdays, but I, one of those days, yeah. I said, sure, came in, wasn't really sure of my, I still don't understand it, you know what I mean? Wasn't really sure of my DJ abilities. Yeah, and had a really good radiothon. They gave me another show that had another really good radiothon. Then they're like, I think we needed to give this guy a job.
Yeah, nice.
So when the SRP came in, I applied for a job, and that's where I'm at today.
Now, let's go even backwards now, because you just inspired me to think of this. When I moved to Ogden, Utah in 86 or so, you know, I had been turned on to really good music by my older sister who was off at college. I came to Ogden is where I got turned on to like really shitty music, like a lot of hair metal and Cruising the Vard and whatnot.
Right.
And I can't remember what you were necessarily into back during high school. I mean, I was into pop music because I had grown up listening to Top 40 in the Midwest and shit like that.
I remember you having a really eclectic music taste. I remember, like, you listening to a lot of bands I'd never heard of, like the Jayhawks and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and,
that's all from my sister.
Husker Du, and you were into, what's the other one, big one that Derek always
Replacements.
Loves? What's the Derek Jensen's favorite band of the world?
Probably the Mat.
Not the Mat, that's what I'm thinking
Husker
of.
Husker Du, Minuteman.
Minuteman.
Yeah. Mike Watt, for sure. Yeah,
I remember you being into that stuff.
Yeah.
I think... Well, for me, because I came to St. Joe's, again, like my sophomore year, and I was growing up around the Roy Hooper-Clinton border, and a lot of that was like hair metal and stuff like sure. that. But when I got to St. Joe's, I feel like my musical palette had been expanded. I started listening to like older R.E.M. before yeah. the Green Album that yeah, was yeah. really important.
I was big into them, too.
I remember, you know, listening to a lot of old U2. I remember sitting in sure. art class and debating with Joe Sampson, which was the better album, Guns N' Roses or YouTube's Rattling Home, you know, right, just right. like all that stuff. And then, you know, even Mrs. Barker, our art teacher, exposed me to a whole bunch of old hippie music that I don't think I ever would have listened to. But
yeah.
I don't know. I really feel like we were lucky. We had a really eclectic group, and it was such a small group.
A lot of people who had a lot of different tastes in a very small school,
yeah,
for sure.
There were some heavy metal kids. There were some punk kids. Sure. There were some indie rock. We didn't really call it indie rock back then, but there was some indie rock kids
college
there, too.
Rock.
Yeah. Well, and I even remember Michelle Mensmer, like when we were juniors, going to the Grateful Dead show and being like, what is that? I've never heard of that before. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So now, where did the blues? You're obviously known as a blues man now, both as a musician and as a DJ a lot of ways. Where did that come in along your biography there?
Well,
besides, I mean, you worked at Dead Goat, but you must have been in the blues before you got there.
Well, that was before. That's why I wanted to work at the Dead Goat, because of the blues. Like 18, 19 years old, I met these hippies at Weber State after the Speedway. They took me to some Dead shows. I started hanging out with them. One day we were at a party. This friend of mine, his dad was the commander of DDO in Ogden. Because of that, you could have keg parties on the base, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
we were having a keg party on the base, and his sister's boyfriend's band was playing, and we were in the house partying, and I picked up a harmonica out of his bedroom, and I came downstairs, was standing in line to get a draft beer, and I started playing this harmonica while this band was playing, and everything just happened. I don't know how it happened. Everything just lined up perfectly. The harmonica was in the right key. The band was playing in the right key. Someone said, "You think you're so good? Why don't you go play with the band?" Like, you know. Right, and when you say that to somebody from Ogden, that's either a challenge or a time for you to put your tail between your legs and walk away.
Yeah.
So I was like, "All right." And I walked up there and I grabbed the mic and I started playing, and I played like three or four songs. And then when I got done, everybody was like, "We didn't know you could play." I didn't know either. I just went for it. And I think to this day, I'm lucky. And I don't know if you've known this, but my mom was a church organist all while I was growing up. And she is kind of a musical prodigy. When she was 3 years old, she was playing organ for the Christian Science Church. They'd like taped cigar boxes on her feet so she could reach the pedals.
Nice.
And I feel like my sense of rhythm and melody, I just innately have picked up from her. And then it was such a rush that I wanted to keep going with it. And because of the instrument, what it it is. I mean, eventually you're going to have to go.
It naturally slides you into the blues.
Naturally slides you into the blues. And then shortly thereafter, I realized almost all all American music comes from the blues. Just like you can't make soup without water, you can't make any American music without some element of the blues or a reaction to it.
Right, yeah.
So I just embraced that. Man, I just almost became like my religion for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And then recently, you know, with the job, they encouraged me to try and expand my musical repertoire. And
Which you always had.
Yeah.
Anyway, as your personal taste,
But I still find myself drawing lines all the time between the old blues artists and what's going on today.
Well, yeah, and that's what I love about being a music fan. Forget about the writing about music and all that. Is just connecting the dots, and I like going backwards further and further as I get older, like connecting the stuff that I love. Let's talk a little about just sort of the state of things as it is now in Salt Lake City. I'm sure you talk to a lot of people who have been around a long time, as we have, seeing venues come and go, bands come and go, different things flare up. You know, I would definitely argue that Salt Lake City as a whole, and probably Utah as a whole, is like better than it's ever been in my memory. It's in its best place in a lot of ways, particularly like culturally, artistically, you know, things of that nature. And maybe not politically necessarily, but that's
culinarily for sure.
Food wise, definitely art scene. Yeah. Music wise, though, it's a little harder because it's hard to open new venues. It's hard to open a bar because of our fucked up liquor laws and things like that. So where do you, when you just kind of look at what's happening in the local music scene and even bands touring through our venues, you know, how do you look at it now versus maybe 20 years ago or 10 years ago?
Well, I miss some of the history of those old venues. I mean, I miss the history of the Dead Goat. I miss the history of the Zephyr Club. With that being said, I mean, I do feel like some places have opened up and have tried to fill that void, like maybe the Garage or even the Stateroom.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you think about it, I mean, the Stateroom as a venue compared to the Zephyr Club, just, what do I want to say, just physically.
Like structurally.
Structurally, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredibly. And even the space, I mean, when you used to have to go down in the basement and huddle in that corner of the Dead Goat, I mean, to be able to go out in the garage and sit out there by the refinery is a whole lot nicer.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's amazing. I think it's amazing to see, like, what Will and Lance have done.
Absolutely.
And how many bands that they've brought into the
non-stop
community.
Through Urban and Kilby both, yeah.
Since I moved down to Salt Lake, it just blows my mind the amount of talent that you can go and see on any given night. To think that Beck is going to play in the park on Thursday is mind-blowing.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, it is totally mind-blowing.
And there's probably three other options happening that night for people with other tastes.
I think Sheryl Crow is playing it up at Twilight. And
that never used to be the case. It was kind of like you get one thing every couple days, hopefully.
Right.
You know, and when you're a voracious music fan, you'll go to things you wouldn't necessarily go to. So I've seen Sheryl Crow.
Right.
Or I've seen things like that. Like, okay, I'll go to that, you know. It was easier because of the jobs I had. But
yeah. But things have expanded. I mean, even Red Butte Garden is a whole lot nicer than it used to be. Remember how hot it used?
Yeah.
I remember when we played up there opening for Etta James, and I picked up my harmonica that had been sitting in the sun. And I almost yelled, motherfucker, in the mic because it burned my lips.
Yeah, yeah.
So now that we've got shade on the stage, you know.
Out.
It's crazy to think.
I was talking to someone just the other day about the Zephyr, and I think places like that that have been gone now like 10 years or more, they kind of expand in our own minds. Like, they didn't believe me, and I was like, I think the Zephyr capacity was maybe 250.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It was pretty small, right? It probably packed more in regularly, but it wasn't as big as people think, but they remember the bands that came through there. They're just like, holy shit, you know, I saw Cracker or whatever, Counting Crows, Cheap Trick. And it's like, about 200 people. You know?
And they talk about it like they're at the depot, don't they?
Yeah, like there was like thousands. Like 1,200 seats or something. It's like, not the case.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to wind it up. Brad, thank you so much for coming in and being part of the grand finale podcast of my own experience here.
Can we let them know that you're going to be on the radio? Will this be out
of
time?
I think this will be out after.
So
hopefully people will hear it both places. So but tell us where we can find you on a daily basis.
I'm on KRCL 90.9 FM Monday through Friday from 2 to 7 p.m.
That's a big ass long shift every day.
Big long. I don't know if anybody else that's on the air that long.
5 hours.
Yeah.
And drive time in and all that. And doing plenty of other work outside for the station.
It helps to be a blues man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Brad. I appreciate it.
God bless you, Dan. I love you.
Love you.
Right on. Yeah.
Hi, it's me, Bill Allred, and if you haven't been listening to my podcast, The Let's Go Eat Show, here's some of what you've been missing.
The cool thing about the Little Chocolatiers is we were able to make some really cool things.
You still get recognized a lot from the show. How often does that happen?
Any little person, you know, we will be confused with. And so, you know, sometimes they'll confuse us with the Roloffs and Oregon, Little People, yeah. Big World. They'll confuse us
actors
with Bill.
And actresses.
Yeah. And so, I mean, so like,
download the Let's Go Eat Show now. It's available on iTunes and theletsgoeatshow.com.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week beginning on Tuesday, September 2nd and running through September 8th. Yes, we are in early September and there are all kinds of goodies happening. I hope y'all are ready for a big, packed, busy week. As I looked at the calendar right there on slugmag.com at the bottom of the homepage, I found so many good shows. I don't know how you could even take it. On Tuesday, September 2nd, an awesome show at Urban Lounge, The Entrance Band, also Dark Season, Red Telephone, a little garage rock for you, a fine way to spend a Tuesday night, and the perfect antidote to the garbage going on at the Energy Solutions Arena where the fucking Eagles are playing. And everyone knows the dude hates the Eagles, as do I. On Wednesday, September 3rd, this is a show that a couple years ago I would not have thought about going to, but I saw the Arctic Monkeys at a rock fest last year. They were a really great live band, really got into their new record. They sounded great live as well. Arctic Monkeys are headlining out at the Great Saltaire, and they have Mini Mansions on the bill as well. On Thursday, September 4th, it is the beginning of yet another Salt Lake Comic Con at the Salt Palace. It's running through September 5th. You'll want to go and stop by the Slug booth if you stop by the old Comic Con. Those things are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And this year they have Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan, people. The Hulkster. I'm sure there's far more famous comic book people there, but the Hulkster, that goes back to my youth. Saturday, September 6th. This is an awesomely huge show. The Oddball Comedy and Curiosity Festival. That's out at USANA Amphitheater, featuring not only Louis C.K., and I am so stoked that he's coming to Salt Lake City, also Sarah Silverman, Aziz Ansari, Hannibal Buress, Chris Hardwick, Dimitri Martin, Whitney Cummings, and so many more. It is a giant stand-up comedy festival. I don't know how they're going to have it set up out there. I assume a couple of different stages. Probably a smallish audience for a giant venue, so the parking and the driving won't be such a headache like at the big rock shows. Great lineup. Louis C.K. and Sarah Silverman in Salt Lake. That is awesome. Also on that very same night, out of the Sandy Amphitheater, all the people who are really into that 80s new wave pop music action, it's the Retro Futura Tour, featuring Tom Bailey of the Thompson Twins, Howard Jones, who used to come through here once a year at least, Midyear of the Ultravox, China Crisis, and Katrina of, yes, Katrina and the Waves. They had that one hit song, you know, the Walking on Sunshine one you can't avoid in any movie trailer that's ever existed in the last 30 years or so. Same night, God, talk about a big night for shows, Curtis Blow, old school hip hop at the Urban Lounge. Man, stand-up comedy, old 80s, new wave, and Curtis Blow. That's a hell of a Saturday night. Save a little bit of energy, though, for Sunday night, September 7th, The Breeders headlining at the Urban Lounge. I love Kim Deal so much, you have no idea. It'll be great to see her in such a small venue. They have the Furs opening the show. That is your weekly daily calendar. As always, I suggest you go to slugmag.com, scroll to the bottom of that homepage. You'll find all kinds of goodies for every day of the week. There's always new listings being added. And of course, if you throw shows or if you're in a band, you can add your own listings to there. And for $5 a month, $50 a year, add some links to your own listings.
Hi, this is Angela H. Brown, the editor of Slug, and I'm sitting here with podcast host of Slug Soundwaves, Mr. Dan Nalen.
Yes. I'm on the opposite side of the desk now.
You are, and this is your last episode
with us. I know, it's crazy.
I can't believe it. It's almost been 2 years.
I know. Time flies. I can't believe it's been 2 years. Seriously. That is a blur.
Well, and how many years have you even lived in Salt Lake City? It's been quite a while.
I've lived in Salt Lake City for the last solid, 15 years.
15.
Yeah, I moved back permanently in 99, and I had been here before in high school and college and stuff and left and came back at the end of the 90s, so it's been a 15-year rock-solid run.
And now you're flying the coop again, leaving Salt Lake City.
And when I moved back here in 99, I was telling my friends, I am getting the hell out of here before the Olympics. It's going to be crazy. and here we are, 12 years after that.
So, but you did keep your word.
I'm around. I've been around. And now I'm moving to beautiful Washington State.
Well, we'll get to the details of that in a minute. You know, the first time, actually, that I remember meeting you. Of course, I'd read your work for years and years over at the Trib, and I think we probably even corresponded over email a little bit. But the first time that I actually really remember having a good conversation with you was, ironically, not in Salt Lake City. It was in Austin, Texas, for the South by Southwest Music Festival. Yeah. And I'd showed up at Stubbs for a day party, and you bought me my first Lone Star beer.
Hey, nice. That's a good memory. Not only is it a good memory in the sense of, that is such a fond memory for me to think about, but it's a good memory that you remember that. Well, I'm sure I was probably a little drunk and stoned at the time. Who knows?
Well, unfortunately, I can't remember which band we were seeing, but
I remember those day parties at Stubbs. They were always great. And that's funny. That's great.
Yeah, lots of free barbecue, lots of free Lone Stars.
Oh, yeah.
And then I remember after we kind of had that short hangout session, just thinking, man, Dan is such a cool guy. Oh. Like why haven't I hung out with him earlier? Like, this guy is really cool. I want to work with him.
Oh.
And at that point, I didn't know how or what, but I really wanted to eventually lure you over to the Slug Fold.
I know. And it probably was like more than 10 years later when I did, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I've written a couple of things over the years.
You have.
Like in like special anniversary issues or when you needed to tap an old guy. Oldish guy.
Slug hasn't been, obviously the only media outlet that you've worked for listeners that they're not as old as you and I. you kind of cut your teeth, I guess, back actually when you moved to college, right?
Yeah, I left Utah and went to journalism school up in Montana, and that's when I started working, in newspapers and stuff. And actually before that, I mean, really, it goes back to when I was a college kid here at the U, I got a job as a bouncer at the Speedway, like the last year or so that the Speedway was open, for people old enough to remember that. And then I also did a show on KRCL as just a volunteer DJ with a buddy, so I was kind of into that music stuff. And then, went off to go to journalism school, and even though I was kind of, at the time, I was like, I'm going to write about politics and all this serious stuff, but I always kept writing about music and arts and stuff on the side. And then as I started to get jobs and I bounced around a little bit, I kept writing about music and arts and stuff on the side, and eventually I got my way back to Salt Lake kind of almost accidentally, where a friend of mine at the Tribune was going on a sabbatical and they needed a writer just for a year contract kind of thing, and I was living in the Northwest at the time, and came back and was like, made a good impression on them, and clearly knew a lot more about kind of the pop music world and music in general and local music, especially at the time, than the folks they had doing it. And so they kept me around and gave me that beat. So I was like a professional music writer and was able to see all kinds of stuff that I wouldn't have never gone to see on purpose, plus go and kind of hopefully expose a lot of like mainstream Salt Lake people to bands and venues that they would have never thought about unless they read like a Slug or something. So
a dream gig, really, for a lot
crazy.
Of people.
Yeah, and it was great and it was super fun. I mean, I burned out on it eventually because I had to go see things like Kenny Chesney every summer, like how many, 8 times or so,
Man, you couldn't pay me enough to go to Kenny Chesney.
Gigantic shows, sometimes you'd be surprised by something, that you thought would suck and it would be good, but yeah, some of that stuff was just soul deadening. but it's crazy. And I remember my first memory of you that sticks out in my mind, and I can't even remember the context other than we probably had met in Texas and we're like, let's do lunch. And I remember sitting around the corner from here and having lunch and just talking about where Slug was at the time and what was going on in the business and all that stuff. And that was super fun. And obviously, like, I'm old enough to remember, Slug being brand new. And when I was like a teenager and my roommate's band getting on the cover and us being all so dope, And so, it's amazing how time flies.
It really is amazing. I remember being 14 years old and picking it up at Grunts and Postures, skipping school and saving all my lunch money so I could buy vintage dresses and records. And
right?
Coming into the bad part of town, which is ironically now like a block away from our office.
Yeah, right? I know. Yeah, that's it. Like, when people ask me where Speedway was, because I've had a lot of friends who have moved here and over the years, and I'm like, well, the viaduct that it was under is gone now, but it was basically like right over here, Fifth South, Fifth West or something, or Fourth South, Fifth West. But at the same time, it's cool that things from way back then, like Raunch, is back and around, just in a different location.
Great.
That kind of thing. But I was talking to somebody else the other day just about how Salt Lake has changed over that, and that's like, this used to be like a one coffee shop town, like Bandaloops and the Roasting Company, and that was like it.
Yeah, and now there's craft coffee roasters popping up all over the place. Oh, I love it. It's great. Yeah. Well, I kind of want to get back to those Tribune days. I mean, my goodness, that was, what, mid-90s, late 90s?
So I worked there just for like a summer in 98, filling in for someone, and then I went and worked in Oregon for like 9 months or so for the Oregonian paper up in Portland, and then a full-time job in 99 I came back, so like summer of 99. And I was there like 8 years or so. I mean, it was a big chunk of my life for sure.
Well, and obviously you've seen the newspaper industry just change. What was it like back then as opposed to what it might be like now?
I mean, honestly, it's night and day from what I gather it is now. So the pay was never great, but nobody gets into newspapers to get paid. You know,
exactly.
It was all for the love of what you were doing and being part of the community and things like that and serving people. At least that's how most of us think of it. And back then, I mean, it was awesome, like in the sense of, you know, we had expenses. You know, you could go expense things. Like, if I needed to go buy a CD from a band I wasn't familiar with, I could do it and the paper would pay for it.
Yeah, I remember once I asked you if I could put you on the list for a Slug anniversary party or something. You're like, no, I'll just expense it, like the $5 ticket price.
Yeah,
like, cool.
Right? Yeah. So that doesn't happen anymore. I distinctly remember, and this is so, it's going to sound like crazy compared to how it is now, but there was one summer when, you know, I had a buddy having a bachelor party in Vegas, and I wanted to do a couple stories that were out away from town. Like, I wanted to go out on the extraterrestrial highway in Nevada and do a story about aliens in Nevada and conspiracies. And then I wanted to go to Lehman Caves at Great Basin National Park, that's right on the border of Utah and Nevada. And then down in Vegas, the same time as my buddy's bachelor party, was like a giant porno convention, right? And so I was able to tell my bosses, and this is, you know, 10 years ago tops, you know, like, okay, if you let me go for a week, I'm going to come back with at least three awesome stories, and I'll look for some other ones, you know? And not only did they let me do it and, like, pay for my gas and hotel rooms, they gave me, like, $1,000 cash to take with me. And I'm like, you're sending me to a gambling state with cash in pocket? What the hell? Yeah. I never thought I would have it so good. that does not happen anymore. That's for sure.
The good old days.
But in terms of the paper, like, the environment was great. The vibe was really good. Honestly, in the features department especially, because we're all people who get to write about art. So it was like me, the movie guy, the TV guy, you know, a theater critic, you know, so we got to sit around and just geek out over all kinds of artsy things, which was a blast.
Did you have set office hours, or was it kind of like you could
kind of
come
home?
Yeah,
you kind of come and go. I mean,
that's great.
That always just depends on your boss, you know, as long as you get your stuff done. But I've also been at places where they want you to be at your desk or whatever. But for me, it was like, because I was out reviewing a ton of shows, I was in the office and I was doing stuff while I was there and getting stuff done. But then I would go home and usually take a nap, honestly, in the late afternoon, so I could get back up and go out, you know.
Well, some of the most productive people in the world take naps.
Yeah, it's needed. It was much needed. And I definitely cranked out more copy than most people there, just because I was always into going to shows and still do that and write about that stuff or write reviews.
And then, like you were saying, you kind of got burnt out, and so you wanted to see what monthlies were about. Is that fair to say?
I think it was more, just kind of like, at that time, because the Trib was still in a good place, like, people didn't leave. And so it was kind of hard to change your beat. Like, if I wanted to stop writing about music full-time and maybe do something else, it was pretty difficult. It's gotten a lot easier now because everybody has to do everything a lot more like a weekly or like at Slug.
Sure.
Well, and that's a really appealing part of the job at a lot of places.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to do something different. And the other thing was, the only way to ever really make any more money at a big paper like that is to kind of become an editor. And then you don't get to have any of the fun part.
Amen.
You're just editing, right? So I went to Salt Lake Magazine, where we were really small staff. There was only like three of us on the editorial side, four maybe at a time, three and a half. You did everything, which was great. Like, you wrote the stories, you edited the stories, you came up with the headlines, you know, a lot of that stuff at a daily paper. You don't deal with the copy editing or the deadlines, for good or ill. And at the magazine, where it's really that small, you did everything. And so that was super fun. And it was kind of the same. I went to City Weekly for a couple of years after that, and it was similar. Like, I was the music editor and then the managing editor, and you get involved with lots of different aspects of it there. So,
well, I think that's something that's so fascinating about your career, Dan, is you've really been part of every single type of media outlet out there, including your work not only with Soundwaves, but with KVR.
KVR, I know. Yeah, and that KVR thing would have never happened if I was at the Trip still, probably. Like, that happened when I went to Salt Lake Magazine, just because we didn't have any kind of advertising budget or marketing at all, and you met someone there, and they didn't have any sort of arts coverage at all, and it's like, well, why don't you do this? Great. Will you say that I'm from Salt Lake Magazine? Great. And then, well, like, 5 years later, you know, I've been doing it, like, every week almost.
Well, and for listeners that aren't aware, can you kind of describe what you do up there at KVR?
So I've been, well, originally, I just went in, and, like, every Friday morning, I would be like, here's what's going on around town in the coming week kind of thing. Would write little scripts and do that, and that was fun because I had never done any kind of radio. It kind of changed to where they were like, you know, instead of having you do a script, why don't you just go and talk to Dan Bomas, and kind of you guys can go back and forth a little more spontaneous. And that was great and super fun. I would go in and record it, and they would run that on Friday mornings. More recently, like every year, they would kick me off during the legislature because all the news would take over from the state ledge. And so this year when I came back, they started a new feature called Books and Beats.
Which I love, by the
which
way.
Which is brand,
it's so
brand
good.
New. And it's Betsy from King's English and myself. Instead of me doing any kind of arts that I would want, more, it's all music, but it's been super fun. More scripted again. I've been doing that through basically the end of August. And then Austin Diamond, a mutual friend of ours, will be taking over that spot after I'm gone.
He's got
and
some big shoes. Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I don't think, I'm sure he'll like it. It's definitely a whole different thing, like writing. And it's amazing, you get reaction from people that you don't get in print, for sure, when people hear your voice. And it's the same with a podcast, right? Like, people, if they hear your voice and hear you in a conversation, they recognize you, like, at a coffee shop or something, way easier than hearing your name and having read a story, maybe. It just seems that way to me, anyway.
It's true.
Crazy.
And now, and you also do your blog. What's going to happen to the blog?
Blog's going to go to sleep, I think. I get to be, because I'm not very technically oriented myself, and I learn stuff as I need to learn it kind of thing, I'm going to have to kind of figure out how I can, like, save the content that I've written over the last 2.5 years and just change the name. It's been SLCene or SLCENE. So I don't know exactly, but I think I'm just going to change it into a name that's more not focused on a certain place and maybe keep doing it and make it more of a personal blog, like Adventures of Me, you know, or something. Or, yeah, use it as a way to just kind of do some freelance stuff or something. I'm not sure. But
well, you know, I know that you've got lots of fans here in Salt Lake besides myself, and so, you know, branding yourself Dan Nalen, I don't think that's a bad idea,
right? Yeah.
I think we all want to continue
to dannalen.com.
yeah, I think we all want to continue to follow your adventures even if they're not in our beloved
Salt
Lake.
So nice. Yeah, well, and I'll be back because my family's here and my friends are here and I love the Salt Lake and Gavin.
A few months back, you and I were talking about how you were taking some, and I don't know if this is a secret, but or if something you wanted to keep on the DL, but you were taking some screenwriting classes.
Oh, yeah.
And so is that kind of a future pursuit?
I hope so. I have taken took a class, got a script rolling. I'm about halfway through my first script. I'm hoping, like, obviously I'm on a pause right now while I kind of scramble and move, and I'm going to be starting a new job at a weekly paper up there, so I'm going to kind of, I'm definitely going to be spending time getting to know the new home in Spokane, Washington. But I'll even tell you what it's about. The first script is basically about a kid who has grown up believing that he is the offspring of a touring hair metal rock and roll guy who came through his mom's town at some point 20 some years ago, knocked up his mom in a massive sexual fiesta, thinks his father had passed away 20 years ago, and then comes to find he might be alive, and then goes to try to find him.
Well,
so
you
that's
know,
sort of the bare bones of the thing.
They say that you should write what you know about this, isn't like based on personal experience.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. And it's funny because, you know, I just kind of dived into the script. They teach you to just kind of write the story, and then you go back and kind of clean it up and fix it. And so I hadn't really thought of, like, character names very much. So all of my characters are named after rock stars that I like, just to help me remember who they are. So, like, the drummer is this guy, the singer guy of this band is so and so.
Give us one of the names.
Know.
What's one of the names?
I think one of the guys is named Max after Max Weinberg, the Springsteen drummer. And I have a guy named after Paul Westerberg of the Replacements in there. I have a romantic lead named after Joan Jett.
Yes.
So, I'll probably go back and switch some of those around, but it helped me remember them in my own mind and keep track of them so far. So, yeah, and I had a couple of readings of the first section ones that went pretty well in terms of a room of just kind of random folks. So that makes me happy. So we'll see.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, please keep us posted on your screenplay and come back and visit us again in Salt Lake.
Oh, thanks, Angela. Dan, thanks for the opportunity. It's been a blast.
We've loved having you as our host.
Oh, thank you. Once again, thank you for listening to Slug Soundwaves. It's been a blast to be a part of this show. And for all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. We're going to have Jimmy Martin in the studio sometime soon. He is our resident movie expert. He's going to discuss the fall movie schedule. We want to hear what movies you're most excited to see this fall. Send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com. Hit us up on Twitter at Slug Soundwaves, or tap into us via Facebook, facebook.com/slugsoundwaves. We just might bring up your suggested flick on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Genevieve Smith, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is one Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd. Technical design is by Kate Colgan. Be sure to fire us up again next week. You will hear great interviews with Ben Winslow of Fox 13 and Terry Gilday of KUER-FM.